Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
All my wolves begin to howl.
Well, hello. It's Todd here at WTIC. It is one of those big community service days for us because we want to. Yes, we want to help the Salvation Army, which, of course, takes care of tons of people, helps tons of people. Because it's Giving Tuesday, we at WTIC in Entercom Hartford are hosting an all-day thing, 12-hour radiothon. We'll be going till 7 o'clock on all of our four radio stations in Connecticut. It's called Feed Connecticut, supporting the Salvation Army's COVID-19 emergency disaster response. And we're trying to raise a ton of money. We're trying to raise a ton of meals. That is, the dollars are measured in meals, because the purpose is feeding people. So we will be doing our regular show, and we will also be doing what we like to do with our friends at the Salvation Army, and that is talking, spreading the word. Joining us now, Major Carl Avery. We'll spend a few minutes with him before we get the regular show started. He's the Divisional Secretary of the Salvation Army's Southern New England Division. Carl, good to have you on once again. Hello there.
Hi there. How are you?
Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Have you been doing this all day?
I've not been talking on the radio all day. I've been doing a few other logistical things, but I have been kind of following what's going on, and it seems to be going really well.
It is going really well. Well, everything you guys get involved with seems to go really well. Tell us about the situation right now. How is the world different from the point of view of the Salvation Army since the virus came?
Well, certainly the Salvation Army is all about helping people. Besides operating our churches, we're out there meeting needs where we find them. And, of course, the virus and this whole idea of social distancing has made it difficult for us to connect with people the way we normally do. We prefer to provide highly individualized service and help walk people through tough times. We have to distance ourselves a little bit here and pass food boxes, out the back door, kind of, in a way to serve people. But we're still doing what we can and able to get in touch with and help a huge number of people.
So how has the demand changed? How big is it right now? How many people's lives have been turned upside down by all the closings of businesses and schools and normal daily life and job loss and all that? How does that quantify in your world?
Well, we're seeing dramatic increases in the number of people who are looking for assistance. Just in the last month, we've helped some 28,000 individuals with primarily food. We provide emotional, spiritual care, things like that as well. But those numbers are way up from what we usually do. But because of the kind of shutdown that we faced as well, we've pretty much stopped a lot of the other things that we normally do and really have focused pretty much 100% of our time on serving people who are in need due to the COVID crisis.
And that requires, well, I guess your fundraising has probably changed. It's probably much harder to generate resources for a big charitable organization like yours in a time of disruption like right now.
This is a kind of a slow time for us normally for fundraising. You know, we're out there at Christmas time, very much in the public view, and you guys help us then as well to raise money normally, which would kind of help us not only at Christmas but through the year. By the time we get around to May, everybody's minds are usually on vacation and other things and not quite the same level of income that we would normally expect. And, of course, we're facing huge increases in expenditures now as a result of the need for food.
So this hit you at a tough time, and just in terms of your normal monetary cycle, and that's part of the reason that we're doing this for you, to get some extra cash in because the demand is high right now.
Absolutely. The cash flow always goes down for us during the as we enter summer and into the summer, especially low. But this is kind of a double whammy here. Besides the increased food demand, we also, while the food banks and Connecticut Food Share have been tremendous at doing what they can for us, we're finding we're having to purchase a lot more food to keep up with the demand that we're faced with our clients and families who are coming in looking for help. So that's made it especially difficult because, as you know, you can walk in the grocery store today and have trouble finding certain items. And we face
Thing. Supply issues and the cost is shooting up as well.
That's exactly right. So we face the same thing, and we're always out there looking for major suppliers that we can try and bring food in from. And we've set up this whole kind of hub distribution plan across the state so that we can do that more efficiently. We've got volunteers out there helping us pack these boxes as the food comes in. It's quite an operation.
Well, congratulations on it being quite an operation. That's great news. Tell us anything else you want us to know before you leave.
Well, I'll tell you what, we appreciate so much Entercom support and WTIC all the time throughout the year. But for the people who are listening today, I, of course, encourage them to stay safe, to keep observing the kinds of practices that they need to keep themselves well and others, but also be thinking about others. This is a time when a lot of people are out there very stressed. I think everybody feels that to some degree, but those who are facing food insecurity and concern about where the next rent check is going to come from are especially hit hard. And anything
yes,
that
indeed.
People can do to help is fantastic.
Well, we hope a lot of people will do. We know it's been a busy day of people contributing. Your goal is $50,000, which will provide 25,000 meals. And we will do our best to get you to that goal.
Well, my sincere appreciation to you and all those who are helping us to do this.
Major Carl Avery is the Divisional Secretary of the Salvation Army's Southern New England Division. Major, we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you so much, sir. And so we do want to encourage you to give. We're not going to make it a major focal point during the show this afternoon, but we'll remind you from time to time. Text feed CT to 71777. Easy way to give. Or call 860-702-0000. That's 860-702-0000. Or go to WTIC.com/feed. How about that? That's what we're up to today, along with the regular talk. So there is, all the craziness going on, and we're going to dive into some of it. We will have the governor here, but for a shortened appearance today, we will take for as long as we deem it necessary to get essential information out but then we will cut away so that we can stay focused on our regular programming and our support for the Salvation Army. So no big blackout of the program today for the governor's press conference. We hope he will forgive us that transgression, but it's something we have to do to make the day work. And me, for one, I'm happy to do it. I am. And let's see. I've got a bunch of stuff here I want to run by you. It's so much fun. Listen to this. This is a woman. This was in the New York Times by one of their, leading lefties, I guess, interviewing a futurist, talking about how the world changes. And this is something I'm fascinated by. If you have any predictions about how the world changes, I want to hear them from you. Because of the virus, in what way do we as people change? How does our society get changed? We've dabbled in this, but I don't think we've really gotten to any substantive place. I want to run this this predictionist by you. She looks into the future. She tells you what's going to happen. She's done it with other, according to this New York Times writer. I'm not promising anything one way or the other, except that she's got some interesting ideas about what the new normal will be. Everyone talks about the new normal. We all accept that now is different, so we figure we're not going all the way back to the way things were. But how do we get changed? And which of these habits that we have now are permanent ones? Because if we are permanently keeping 6 feet away from each other, that makes a lot of things that we normally engage in difficult, like going out to eat, standing in line, all the things we can't do right now, or we're finally starting to get to do again right now. We're at the beginning stages of. Anyway, I want to run through some of those future things with you and get your predictions as well. 860-522-9842. Stay with us on WTIC. All right, so predictions. How does society change? How does politics change? Are we less trustful of government moving forward? I would think so. I would think there's going to be more anger, but maybe it goes in the other direction. I don't know. It seems to me anger is growing over shutdowns. This woman, Laurie Garrett, quoted in the New York Times, she says the history is right in front of us. Did we go back to normal after September 11th? No, we created a whole new normal. We securitized the United States. We turned into an anti-terror state. And that affected everything. We couldn't go into a building without showing ID and walking through a metal detector, and we couldn't get on airplanes the same way ever again. There are going to be similar kinds of permanent changes with this virus. Not the metal detectors, but a seismic shift in what we expect and what we endure and how we adapt. Maybe we do politics differently. Maybe we vote differently. Maybe the fight between left and right falls down in a way that, it gets restructured, kind of comes out of the air in a soft landing, or maybe it's a hard landing and all the pieces get broken. What are your thoughts on this, please? We'll go to Goldie in Torrington. Hi, Goldie.
How are you?
Go right ahead.
I grew up in the 50s, and we went through the flood of 55 in the Naugatuck River Valley. We were without food.
Tell me a little about that. I have no awareness of it. How devastating was that?
It was incredibly devastating. We had no food or power for a month.
Wow.
And there was no way to get around.
Do you have a sense that... Yeah, go ahead.
No, there was no way to get around to get anything. Everything was closed.
Which meant what in terms of your daily life?
It meant me getting a bucket and going to a stream nearby the house to get water. And that we fortunately had a propane stove so we could boil it and have water to drink.
And how do you get food? Were you hunting for food or fishing?
No, all the fish got washed away in the flood.
All right. So what was the long term repercussion? How did life change for you over the long term?
Well, it made me become a survivalist. I would go out in the woods and pick get fruit off some trees, pick grapes, pick apples, that kind of thing. That's what we survived on.
And do you think so, a similar dynamic will take place now, that people will realize that we're too cut off from nature and don't know enough how to keep ourselves alive?
I think people have no concept of what they could do to survive if they had to.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty true of me.
Well,
I don't know what the first thing is. Can you tell me what the first thing is that you should do?
First thing you do is you got to secure a supply of water. Then you got to find some food. I used to go in the woods and hunt rabbits and things, so we'd have something to eat.
Yeah, see, I'm not ready for that. I want the homemade pasta shop open if I'm going to have rabbit. But I like the direction you're going in, and I thank you for that, Goldie, because I think that's what we need to think along those lines. We do. We need to, isn't that essential now, that every household have at least one person in it who's thinking like a survivalist, like somebody who wants to be familiar with the land and figure out how to live off of it when there are no resources coming our way, no modernity, when the stores are... What happens if all the shelves are empty? You know, the meat shelves are emptying out now. What happens if that dynamic continues? If the lack of supply continues to be the defining issue of this virus? You see, the politicians think they can dive in and manage these things and exploit these things for their own benefit. But there are all these unintended consequences. I just don't see them being able to manage what they've gotten themselves responsible for. I don't. 860-522-9842. So what is the long-term dynamic? How does politics change? I can't figure out. I keep trying to answer this question. Do we become less trustful of our government, or more trustful of our government? What are you seeing in the governmental response? Are you seeing sincere, dedicated professionals trying to do their best to help us along? Do you see a desire to embrace democratic principles and principles of liberty? Or do you see it heading in a different direction? These are the things I'm thinking about. I'm looking at it. I'm saying, I don't know how people could get more trusting of government. And I don't know how it changes our lives if people get less trusting of government, except that I think people might get smarter and at least change government more often, not have one party be in charge all the time. That this thing we're going through right now should be seeding mistrust, I would think. But I don't know. Maybe you have a different feeling about it. Do we ever go out to eat normally in restaurants again? What are your thoughts on that? Will we ever let them shut us down again? They talk about multiple waves in this. Anyway, let's talk about it. 860-522-9842. Time for news on WTIC. Yeah. It's Giving Tuesday. We're doing a 12-hour radiothon and intermittently telling you about our fundraising for the Salvation Army. Our target for today is $50,000. That'll provide 25,000 meals for the Salvation Army to spread out the way it does. If you want to donate, text FEEDCT to 71777. 71777. Go to WTIC.com/feed or call 860-702-0000. So far today, we've brought in almost $40,000, three quarters of the way there. No, four fifths. I'm sorry. I'm not good at math. We've brought in $39,886 out of the 50 we're targeting. and almost 20,000 meals out of the 25,000. So doing quite well. Your help is needed, though. Go to WTIC.com/feed or text FEEDCT to 71777. How is the world changing? Will you be more generous, more charitable? Are you impacted in that way? What changes in the world? I'm looking for significant ones. We've chatted about this before. We've talked about smaller things. I'm looking for big policy shifts, perhaps, big political changes. Listen to this comment the governor made about illegal immigrants in the state and how they should be treated during this period of time. I wonder if the emotional connection to this issue and people's perspective on it switches during this period of time. Wait a sec, he's not playing on air. Let me double check the governor, make sure he's got his right. Actually, we are going to the governor live around 4:15. It will be short tonight, though. We're not staying for the whole press conference.
Yeah, I think Lisa Tepper Bates is going to roll out some additional initiatives we can do to help everybody, including the undocumented.
So he says, at least on a temporary basis, I think he meant temporary basis, that there will be, well, I'll let him say it again.
Yeah, I think Lisa Tepper Bates is going to roll out some additional initiatives we can do to help everybody, including the undocumented. I'm glad you pointed out, Oscar, that...
That's somebody's name? Okay. How do you respond to this idea that there would be special consideration to people in the country illegally, that benefits should go to them? This is a standard for the Democrats, I don't think for any legitimate reason. I think just part of their overall election rigging scheme that has to do with diverting resources from working taxpayers to people who vote for Democrats, whether working or not working or in the country legally or illegally. And I wonder if attitudes change, if there will be more feelings of love and compassion and embrace for people who break in and stay and violate the law, or will we be less tolerant on a policy basis moving forward? 860-522-9842. Bill, hi, you're on WTIC.
How are you?
Thank you, Bill. Go ahead.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Bill, go ahead.
Hi. No, I'm calling with regard to the 55 flood. The gentleman who spoke to you earlier, basically what took place in 1955 when we had that flood, it devastated cities throughout all of Connecticut. But we didn't have FEMA back then. We didn't get government assistance back then. We didn't get unemployment insurance as we do now. We weren't taking $1,200 a week. If you didn't get out of your and work to rebuild your house, you didn't have a house. The difference between
you don't mean to go find a job, but actually stepping outside with your tools and rebuilding your house.
Yeah, literally, you had to go out and actually work. You had a job. You had to work to make money. You had to work to pay for that house. We didn't get government handouts back in 1955 like they do today. The government came
in later
with assistance. Pardon?
Well, how did that impact the way we functioned as a society? Did that change the path of America in any way, do you think, or Connecticut?
No, it changed the path of Connecticut from the standpoint that we were self-sufficient. We didn't rely on government like we do today.
Yeah, but that's what they've been doing since then. So the tragedies of the past fed this desire to have government act as a cushion for us. And now we've gotten to a point where the cushion has become a plague, perhaps, because it's contributed to this big, unwieldy, wasteful, money-consuming and squandering federal and state bureaucratic machinery that's destroying the nation, I think. And will something going on now turn that in another direction, do you think?
No, I don't think so at all. I think the experience we're seeing with COVID is even more scary than in past. I can't imagine government playing the role that it does today, where it's overwhelming. I mean, it's become a monarchy versus helping the average person work.
Yeah, it's a total change. All right, Bill, thank you for the call. 860-522-9842. So Bill is saying we've gone from 65 years ago with government not having a role in helping average people with average tragedies to now helping everybody with everything. And he thinks that will perhaps, maybe this is the peak of it. What do you think? 860-522-9842. Bob in Glastonbury. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Todd. How you doing? I'm sitting in front of my crystal ball, and I'm trying to, you know, imagine what I see down the road 5, 10, 20
is
years
it,
from now. We're gonna
is it getting we're sharp gonna and clear for you? Can you see it?
Yes. This is what's going to happen. We're going to bring back jobs, bring back production. Unions will get stronger. They'll make demands. We'll have slowdowns. We'll have strikes. And we'll all of a sudden remember why we went to China 40 years ago.
Well, all right. All right. So you're not optimistic. You think it's we're going to repeat the same mistake.
No, I'm just I am optimistic. We got to do we have to do this. But let's, look back over history and see why we're in the position we're in today.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's a lot of reasons. It's not just unions. Unions were, of course, a tragedy. Anything that any undemocratic force, any special interest group, unions are a special interest group designed to distort the political process, to take away democracy, because democracy is based in the idea that each man, each human, don't be sensitive, each person has a certain level of power in our society, and ideally that's divided up fairly evenly. But of course, some people being viewed as smart or worth following accrue more power in our society, and they become riggers. They become the people who try to and have the influence to push things in a certain direction disproportionately, with disproportionate force than regular people do. And what happens over time, and I think this is what we feel about our society now that makes us frustrated, is that so much has now been rigged, that so many people have banded together into these special groups who secretly work behind the scenes to manipulate the process, to make sure they get things they don't deserve, that the cash flows in big amounts, but it doesn't seem to invigorate the society. It invigorates certain classes of people. For example, unions, a special interest group, are lapping in the power. They control the state of Connecticut. They've bankrupted the state of Connecticut with their partnership with the Democratic Party. There is a rigging scheme that is destructive. Can that get broken up? Can that configuration of distortion of democratic values survive this period of time, or can it be changed? 860-522-9842. These are the big questions, This is the big thing we've got to figure out. Dan in Glastonbury. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I'm wondering where the outrage is on, the greatest lie ever told, which is that we had to destroy a booming economy so that we could prevent the healthcare system from being overwhelmed, because an overwhelmed healthcare system would lead to unnecessary deaths.
So well, wait a sec, Dan. Is that the big lie? Why is that the big lie, as opposed to once the curve was flattened, not having the Neds of the world step forward and say, "Wow, we did it, guys. We flattened the curve. We stopped the overrunning of our and the overwhelming of our healthcare system, and now we just have to go back to work and fight the virus with masks and gloves and what have you." Why was that the big lie?
Well, that was the big lie, that the flattening of the curve would allow us to, get back to normal. We flattened the curve. There is no more increase. There's dramatic decreases every day. There are counties in Connecticut, Talon and Windham County, that have nobody hospitalized as a result of COVID, and those counties are shut down. This is punitive. This is tyranny, and these people are out of their minds, and they need to be stopped.
Well, I agree with all that. I'm not sure that flattening the curve wouldn't have been a bad thing to engage in for a couple of weeks and then let everybody go back to work. I guess what you're saying the lie is that they ever intended to stop it once the curve was flattened. They didn't really want to just flatten the curve. They wanted to shut us down. Is that your point?
That is exactly my point, and it's as evidenced by the daily continuum of this continuing on. What is going to be different on May 20th that is different than today? What is going to be different on October 20th or December 20th? When we all go back to work, there will be a spike in cases, I'm sure. So what is the difference if we do that tomorrow or we do that in 6 months?
Well, you're right. There will be a spike in cases. There needs to be a spike in cases because that's inevitable when people start circulating again. The question is who gets those cases. It's not about how many cases there are. It's about who gets sick. And the goal of this thing should be to protect people who are the most vulnerable. They should be socially isolating. Everybody else should be out there trying to make the engines of the world function. Right, Dan?
I really like this word allow, though. It makes my skin crawl when I hear that a politician is going to allow me to do something. I'm wondering where I live when I hear that a politician.
Well, you're right about that. Or even reopen the economy. They don't open or close the economy. We do. And thank you, Dan, for the call. And the fact of the matter is we will decide when we go to the store again or when we go to the movie theater again or when we eat out in a restaurant. And there is no benefit to having a dictator decide as opposed to democratic principles. Democratic principles are always the best way. It's better to have a functioning market decide what works as opposed to a dictator decide what works. But the Democrats are showing their true natures now. They are the party of dictatorship. 860-522-9842. Quick break. We'll take more phone calls on WTIC. By the way, in honor of our benefit for the Salvation Army today, our Feed Connecticut Radiothon, I will be on live till 7 o'clock tonight. We will go to the governor, but it will be a shortened acceptance of his press conference by us. He'll probably go on for the usual hour, hour and a quarter, but we will not take the whole thing so we can stay focused. 860-522-WTIC, we're talking about significant changes. There was a suggestion earlier that jobs, manufacturing jobs, will come pouring back into the country, and as a result, unions will once again be able to force up the cost of employing people artificially in this country, leading to job losses once again. But I don't think that many jobs are coming back. I don't know that, you know, the certain things we will probably get aggressive about making sure some minimum amount are being manufactured here. I think that would be healthy. How we do that without just creating another rigged system is is always the challenge. Jay calling from Bristol. Hi, Jay.
Hi. Says my question is basically with the governor's comments about giving more to illegals. It's what has changed from what we were doing in the past? You know, says are we going to give them houses now? Because like I said, there's people in the state that worked all their lives that don't get a quarter of what the illegals get. So I'm asking, what's changed about that? You know.
I think it's a dramatically different time when Democrats used to lie about their preference for people from other countries. Their favored voters are people from other countries. And
right.
They're always maneuvering to try to get them rights here. But they used to have to slither around behind the scenes. Now the divide has become so clear that those voters are vital to Democrats and they can control elections if they get enough people from other countries to come here, accept free money, and vote for the people that Democrats tell them to vote for, then they can win elections. So they're willing to be brazen about it. So that's what's different to me, is just that we've gotten to this point where the battle lines, I think, are more clearly drawn. But in terms of policy, they will get more generous all the time with illegals and give them more power and money all the time if they can.
Yep. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir, for the call. Good to hear from you. 860-522-WTIC. Next up, we've got Jim in Southington. Hi, James.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, I just saw you guys are talking about opening the government and everything. But one of the things that you never hear about is reopening the churches to worship.
They've never been closed to worship, though.
Yeah, they have. Most of the Catholic churches are all closed. You can't go into the
church. That's a Catholic problem, though. Is that what you want to address, though, that you want to see a Catholic resurgence?
No, I don't want to see a resurgence or anything. I just feel that no matter where you go, no matter what denomination you are, you can't worship because the buildings are locked to worship. You can't go in them. So I just think that, you know, when you're talking about reopening the government to the economy, I think other aspects of the economy shouldn't be forgotten. And it seems like religion is one of the things that's out there that's being a forgotten thing.
Well, it's forgotten by the people, though. It hasn't been ordered closed by the government. Or unless you're talking about right now during this period. Are you talking about right now?
I'm talking right now during this period, yes.
Oh, okay. So you're talking about the religious freedoms that have been thwarted
exactly.
by the...
You know,
okay.
Our religious freedoms are being taken away from us also, as far as...
I didn't understand that. Thank you for the call, Jim. That's true. What happens with that?
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.